Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tennis.com podcast. I'm Nina Pantic, and I'm joined by Irina Falcone.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And our special guest is Anne Wooster. She is the former New Haven tournament director and now the president of UTR, which is Universal Tennis Rating. So, Anne, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Nina and Irina. Good to be here.
We'd love to just start with checking in and seeing what you're up to these days, because we know that you were a longtime director in New Haven for 21 years, but things have quickly changed and possibly for the better. So what are you up to these days?
Well, it was an amazing 21-year run for the Connecticut Open. It was an ATP and a WTA event, and a lot of wonderful memories, a lot of giving back to community. But at the end of the day, the financial model didn't work without a title sponsor. So we sold the tournament to China in February. I was hoping to take the summer off and was lucky to have quite a few opportunities for the next chapter of my life. And when Mark Leschly and Universal Tennis came along, it was an opportunity too good to be true. As you probably know, UTR is a free rating of ability for every player and a digital community that supports level-based play. And it tracks and measures every player in the world on one rating system. And it expands opportunities for players at all levels, all ages, genders. And it's basically all about making tennis more affordable, accessible, and fun for everyone. So it's a brilliant concept with really great partners, fantastic team. And it was the chance to use 35 years in pro tennis, on all sides of pro tennis, to make a difference and grow our sport using technology. So I'm pretty excited to be here.
That's so cool. I mean, UTR has become so popular in so many ways for colleges, for junior players coming up. It's so cool to hear about it. We had Stephen Armitage back a while back. He was on the podcast as well, and he was telling us all about it. Super cool, super innovative. So you're based in Connecticut. The company is based in California. Is that a problem at all? Like, do you have to commute a lot or no?
No, we are almost 50 employees and consultants, and the preponderance of the company works remotely, not just in the United States, but around the world. But as president, I'm a big believer in FaceTime, so I get out to Palo Alto, where the headquarters is, at least once a month. And then I go to the Grand Slams. With modern technology, as you can imagine, with a technology company, we take full advantage of all kinds of technology platforms. It's easy to communicate with all of my colleagues everywhere in the country and in the world.
Were you familiar with UTR before you got signed on, like pretty familiar with it? Because it's been around for a couple of years, and I think it's grown exponentially in terms of popularity and use. So now I think it's everywhere. But did you know about it from the very beginning?
Basically, the company's UTR engagement platform is built on the rating, but the rating is just a foundation. And since Mark has bought the company, there's all kinds of tools and technology for tennis organizers to run engaging open level based events and offering players the chance to connect and discover events and other players and clubs and tournaments worldwide. So there's a platform for high schools. There's a platform for colleges, as Irina just mentioned. There's a platform for clubs. There's a platform. There's a mobile app for individual players. And there's in the very first month, there's more than 25,000 downloads of this new mobile app in the first from 70 different countries. So, the rating is just the foundation, but there's all these other tools and technologies to help grow the game and create this tennis ecosystem around level-based play. We hear from parents and players constantly about how UTR is a great equalizer and creates opportunities, particularly for kids that wouldn't necessarily have the opportunity. So I just heard this story last week. There's a single mom of three tennis playing kids. And for the oldest, the family sacrificed everything. So money they didn't have and weekend after weekend of travel in order for their kid to secure a college scholarship. And then kid number two couldn't afford to do what they did for kid number one. So he wasn't able to get on the radar of college coaches and wasn't able to get a scholarship or play tennis in college. And then along comes kid number three, who plays high school team tennis, and his matches counted for UTR because UTR recognizes high school tennis. So this kid number three had a UTR, was on the radar of college coaches. So he got recruited for college. So same result as kid number one, but just way less travel and way less financial burden for this family. So because of this high school platform, UTR is really making tennis so much more affordable and accessible to kids who can't go out and play competitive tournaments.
You know, it's interesting because you mentioned it's way more than just a rating, because we actually had Bob Moran on, the Charleston tournament director, and they held a pre-qualifying tournament based off UTR. So we've heard a lot about different kinds of events beyond just knowing what your number is. But you said that you play. How did you get into tennis? Why tennis? What got you in the door? You know, was your first job? I know you also worked for the WTA. So like, how did you get this rolling?
I come from a tennis family, and I started playing when I was probably 4 or 5 years old. My parents taught tennis as a second profession, and also as volunteers in our community. So my father would teach all of my friends and me on Saturday mornings, and we'd all have to play matches during the week because he recognized that a lesson is great, but you really need to understand match play. And so that was my introduction to tennis, thanks to my parents. And I was a very avid high school player and did not play at school. I went to a D1 school, so probably wouldn't have, I wasn't recruited, and I probably would have barely made the team. But I basically decided that I wasn't going to be a tennis player when I grew up, so I was not going to spend 80 hours a week traveling and training. So I joined the student union instead and used my event marketing passions and skills to organize plays and concerts and movies and speakers. And that really defined my 4 years at Duke University. And senior year, like so many other seniors, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And Todd McCormick, the son of Mark McCormick, the founder of IMG, walked up to me on the quad and said, "You don't know me, but I know what you do here, and I think you'd be perfect for my father's company, IMG." So my first, and I had no idea what IMG was. I had no idea what sports marketing was. I went off to Spain and worked as an au pair to learn Spanish, came back a year later and bumped into Todd. And that's how I started at IMG, answering phones and taking ticket orders in the attic of Longwood Cricket Club in Boston in 1983. And then, so that was really the beginning. And within a week, I knew I'd found my niche in life, and I got a chance to work in the sport, that was in my blood. And that was so good for, for friendships, for fitness, for fun, and a sport you could play forever. So that was the beginning. And as Arena mentioned, I was very honored to be named the first CEO of the WTA 11 years later, first female CEO of any sports organization at the time. And that's where I met Arena. and a lot of other players. And then when I wanted to focus on my family and raising my children, I decided to do something a little bit more consistent with my personal priorities. And so that's when I went to New Haven and started running the Connecticut Open at Yale the week before the U.S. Open for 21 years. And now here I am in sort of APW 3.0 with a technology startup out of Silicon Valley, which is all about growing tennis and this movement and groundswell that it will change the game because it's equal, it's open, and it's inviting.
I love that you said APW 3.0. It's almost like you've had like several careers in your life, if you will.
I definitely have. And the chance to use 35 years on all sides of pro tennis, you know, the player side, the tournament side, the sponsor side, my Virginia Slims days, and then the governing body side to make a difference and grow the sport was, you know, using technology was just sort of the chance of a lifetime. I had one board member interview me, and after, you know, looking at my resume and hearing about my background, he looked at me and he goes, "Don't you feel that this job is your destiny, Anne?"
And that's pretty cool, yeah, for someone to say.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. So it's an amazing team of people who are all very mission-driven and all very committed to growing the game. And, you know, a lot of tennis players and a lot of non-tennis players, but we're really trying to get back to the passion and love of tennis, about community, fun, friendship, and really help grow this movement. And I'm excited to be a part of it. I feel really lucky.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
All right, guys, you're listening to the Tennis.com podcast with special guest Anne Wurster. We're talking about her experience in tennis, over 35 years worth of experience. Let's get back to Anne.
With your new role, what would you say is like going to be your day-to-day?
So my focus broadly is on growing and developing universal tennis worldwide and spreading the word about the mission and how universal tennis is positively impacting this game and this movement and this groundswell that we're helping to build. With, 35 years of relationships in tennis, my focus is on industry relations and building partnerships with any and all key stakeholders in the sport and working with those stakeholders to grow the game using technology and leveraging technology. So that's a pretty big part of, so I'll have meetings with federations, with governing bodies, with coaches, with ATP and WTA tournament directors, like the Bob Morans of the world who stage pre ATP or WTA tournaments and that offer a wild card or even sometimes prize money in their communities. And these UTR tournaments help to build awareness for ATP and WTA tournaments, and they also help to build a digital community in each one of those markets. So lots of meetings.
You seem like the most well-connected person in tennis. And I know I haven't been to New Haven, but I used to see photos of you with the players. And then I know when the tournament was ending, people were genuinely very sad and upset. Like, I mean, I think Petra Kvitova is someone you had at the tournament many times, a multiple-time champion. What were your relationship like with the players? And do you have any special connections or memories with anyone that maybe our listeners might be familiar with?
That's so nice of you to say. You know, my entire career has been built on relationship building and bringing people together around common goals. I mean, you know, the New Haven tournament and the week before the U.S. Open would never have survived if it wasn't for this group of very diverse stakeholders that came together, you know, Yale, the city of New Haven, the state of Connecticut, Yale New Haven Hospital, sponsors from both the pilot, the private and the public sector, and, you know, the ability to bring those very diverse and unique stakeholders together was a real thrill for me. And it meant that the tournament was able to not just survive, but thrive for 21 years. So when it comes to players, I basically, you know, and Arena can speak to this, I always treated the players like business people. And, you know, when we introduced the ACES program back in 1995, because players then were doing very little to promote and market their sport, I simply sat down with them and said, you know, we need you to do more to promote, you know, and develop your sport. You need to leave a legacy to those that come behind you, just like a legacy has been built and left for you by Billie Jean King and Martina Navratilova and Chris Evert. And, you know, whether it was a WTA patch that they had to wear or ACES or any other new rule, I always just tried to explain things to players as business people. And I found that the more you treated them like professionals, the more they acted like professionals. And when it came to having my own tournament after working on all these different sides of the sport, it was very important to me to make the players feel welcome. And I had seen so many best practices around the world. I've seen a lot of not so good practices as well. And so I took all those learnings and really tried to make the players feel super comfortable in New Haven. Everything from, you know, hiring the best player services team I could possibly find in the world to having lots of practice courts to the best food, to a very popular passport program where they ran around New Haven and experienced all the world-class international award-winning restaurants of New Haven, to playing golf at Yale, to daily gifts, to just welcoming them when they walked through the door. The feedback that we always got that is that players really felt welcome in New Haven. Lindsay Davenport and then later Petra Kvitova coined it the calm before the storm of New York. And so we just tried to make everything easy and fun for players. And when, you know, even those videos that Arena just mentioned, we had so much fun with the players, whether it was a solar eclipse video or a shot clock video. Players loved, we would pick salient, relevant topics. We had a world-class PR team, Matt Van Tynen for a long time, and then Katie Spellman more recently. And then, you know, we just did really, really cool things with the players that resonated with them. And then they would share and retweet on their social media platforms. And, you know, just social media has made it easier to keep in touch with players. So whereas recruiting used to be like a spring job for me, it, you know, over the past 10 years, it's really become a year-round job and keeping in touch with players 12 months a year. So that really helped with relationship building. And I think the players enjoy having a female tournament director and a female who is married with kids. I've had a lot of players tell me I'm a role model and ask me for life advice. So it's just something that I've always really enjoyed and treasured. And I feel lucky to have the relationships that I have with players and still do. Going to the French Open in this new role was a real joy. And I had so many tennis players say really nice things about being glad that I was staying in tennis, because I did look at several opportunities outside of tennis.
What would you have done outside of tennis? I'm just a little curious because it sounds like you are all in tennis forever.
I have this whiteboard in my home office, and I had a list of tennis opportunities that I was looking at, non-tennis sports opportunities that I was looking at, and non-sports. And when you announce that you're selling your tournament to China, sort of everyone knows you're available. And so there was a lot of incoming calls and interest and opportunities. So it was a lot of fun networking with people, longtime friends in sports and entertainment marketing. I really enjoyed the transition, but was very clear that this Universal Tennis opportunity was just too good to be true. So I even gave up on my dream for taking the summer off. But I did take my first summer vacation in 22 years last week. I went to Scotland.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
In 22 years, that's mm-hmm. a good effort.
Yeah, no, because when you run a tournament, it's a 52-week project. And those last 3 months are the most intense and, you know, 15-hour days and marketing and public relations and social media and operations and building a site and building a player field. So there's just no way. We had a no vacation policy. And so, of course, even the tournament director had to abide by it.
I just want to follow up on everything you've said. It must have felt pretty good on getting all those calls and all those messages. It must be nice to feel wanted when people see that you've done such a great job and had such success with a tournament. They obviously want you part of their team. And I can attest to New Haven being a wonderful tournament. Every time I went there, I absolutely loved it. So thank you. And it is sad that it's gone, but you did really an amazing job. And as I was listening to you talk about it, it was amazing to see how you guys never stopped trying to be better. It was always like, what more can we do? And that's really important, I think, for players, because a lot of the times it's like, okay, well, it's all about the fans. It's all about the money coming in. But at the end of the day, it's really all about the players. And that's what I know I felt that when I was at New Haven.
Oh, that's really great feedback. And yes, I was just absolutely dreading this announcement on February 1st that we were selling the tournament after so many people, players, staff, sponsors, partners really, gave it their all for so long. And the notes on social media, text, phone calls, emails, I actually made a book of all the nice notes because I was completely blown away by them. And it really helped me to recognize that even though the tournament was sold to China, all the memories, all the learnings, all the people that it touched, all the inner city youth that it touched, none of that will ever change. That will never go away. And that was a huge part of saying goodbye. So, and then of course we got really lucky because we started talking to the Oracle Challenger Series about possibly replacing Chicago on the Oracle Challenger Series. And I'm super excited that they chose New Haven. And so in our very first year of no Connecticut Open, we have a Oracle Challenger Series event, ATP and WTA Challengers. So I'm sorry to see the Connecticut Open go, but really excited and grateful to Oracle for bringing pro tennis back to New Haven and so soon, a week after.
It's impressive how quickly they pounced on the same area because it's the same center, right?
Same center. We're going to use the courts of Yale. We're going to use the bells of the tennis center. We're not going to play in the stadium in year one. So, but we're building a stadium on one of the courts of the Yale Tennis Center.
Hey guys, so we're here with Ann Worster, an amazing role model. She has been in tennis for so long, and she was the tournament director for New Haven Tournament, which was an incredible WTA tournament for 21 years. Let's get back to her.
What's your role with that Oracle Challenger? Do you have an official capacity or you're just helping out?
I sort of helped to put the deal together last winter and into the spring, and then I think they call me the tournament ambassador in press, you know, releases. But yeah, I'm basically the go-between Yale and Oracle and the Tennis Foundation of Connecticut, which is the foundation that owns the tennis center and owned the Connecticut Open sanction. So, but there's a lot of capable people that are taking all that and making it happen. You know, I'm helping a little bit with player recruiting. And, you know, we were Ali Risk and Stephen Amritraj got married a couple of weeks ago, and it was an amazing event. And, you know, there was like 15 American women there. And besides the fact that it was a really fun reunion with all these great players, and we all had so much fun, but I was able to make sure that they all entered the Oracle Challenger Series before the deadline. And I looked at the entry list, and it's like most of the wedding is there. I just sent an email to Ali and Stephen yesterday saying most of the wedding is on this list.
Wow. So networking and a celebration of Stephen and Ali at the same time.
And so one of the best parts about the wedding was when I showed up to the rehearsal dinner and Ali's wearing this gorgeous dress and looks absolutely just so beautiful. And she was wearing a Connecticut Open player gift from 4 years
ago.
No way. It was so fun. It was so rewarding. It was a really fun wedding. It was so special. And they are an amazing couple. And everyone at that wedding like became best friends. It was like there was just so much love in the air. And it was a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
It's another big testament to you and your career, because getting invited to a player's wedding is no small feat as a tournament director. So that's pretty cool too.
Stephen always laughs that Stephen and I knew each other before UTR. And of course, Ali played the Pocket Open many times. And so Stephen always jokes about how many times he came to me as a USTA coach begging for wild cards. But we were able to take care of quite a few American players, including Ali, along the way. So it was nice to be invited to their wedding.
It tells a lot. And it's interesting you mention wild cards and all that, because I was just kind of seeing how the Bronx Open got underway and how they were trying to figure out all that stuff from the very bottom up for the first time. And is there any, like, I know everyone's very competitive in tennis and everyone's fighting for their place, but is there any animosity or annoyance when your tournament ends and some other tournament starts right away, like the Bronx Open came in that same week?
The week before the US Open is a super challenging week on the WTA Tour because it's the US Open. And over the years, more and more players have their commercial endorsement obligations that week and Madison Avenue obligations that week, or they want to practice, especially on the men's side. But thankfully, a lot of the women prefer to play into form and play tough matches instead of practicing. So we were really lucky. We had an average of like 5 of the top 10 players in the world every single year for 21 years. And a cutoff, you know, that was, you know, crazy strong, like 38 in the world. That said, the U.S. Open grew to 3 weeks with their fan week, and it was getting harder and harder to keep up with prize money increases on the WTA. Prize money is going up to $1 million at that level next year. We struggled with finding a title sponsor. So basically, we had to make the difficult decision to sell the sanction. But I really think that the reason New Haven succeeded for so long is because in this challenging week is because it's so proximate to New York. When the sanction was in San Antonio, it didn't work. It was in Atlanta long ago, it didn't work. It was in Stratton Mountain, didn't work. The first time it ever worked was in New Haven. So it was a great deal for the WTA and the, you know, U.S. Open to have player jobs, proximate to New York. Players could fly in. They didn't have to get in an airplane. We literally drove them to their New York hotel, as Arena knows, when they finished in New Haven. And it was just easy, you know, the calm before the storm of New York. But when we had to sell, it was just very clear that the financial model no longer worked. So the WTA was faced with a hole in the calendar, a very important hole, because as Arena knows, you have to have player jobs leading into the fourth and final Grand Slam of the year. So that was a big problem. They struggled to find a replacement tournament, even at a lower prize money level, what we call international on the WTA. And so I think they have several cities that are interested in 2020, but they really needed jobs for 2019. So they were lucky that the Bronx stepped up, the NYJTL board, and the USTA subsidized it. The WTA subsidized it because the Bronx could not do it on their own. And it's this beautiful Carrie Leeds facility with, I think, like 20 courts. And so it's great that it was utilized. But the only way they'll be able to succeed is if they find some major sponsors. So hopefully they'll have some sponsorship interest in the future. Anything, we were hoping that the that players would have jobs, but the difficulty in getting a commitment for 2019 from other cities really just underscored how amazing it was that New Haven had this 21-year run, because it's a really, really, really tough week on the WTA calendar, probably the toughest week on the calendar. You know, there's no doubt that players need jobs that week, and the Bronx filled a very important role, and we should be grateful to them for stepping up.
Yeah, it was a great week. We want to just congratulate you on all that you've done for tennis and all these different jobs and roles and things you've filled.
Oh, that's so nice.
You're a badass.
repping the women in tennis business, and it's important to have women in high roles, and you're definitely in all of them. So we want to thank you for joining us today. I think we've covered a lot of ground.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. And please say hello to Ed McGrogan for me.
Will do, will do. Thanks so much, Anne, and have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks for having me.
From the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, this has been the Tennis.com Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to stay caught up. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app, as well as tennis.com/podcasts. We're your hosts, Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone. We'd like to thank our team, editor and audio designer Luke Mahoney, producers Alexa March and Sean O'Malley, and executive producers Shelby Coleman, Kyle Einhorn, and Andy Chu.